Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. We don't have to tell you that regular unleaded gas averaged about $3.60 a gallon last week, and many places higher. John McCain and Hillary Clinton know it. They're proposing lifting the 18.5-cent federal gas tax over the summer to give drivers a break. Barack Obama knows it too, but he's not buying the tax plan. He calls it a gimmick. Energy analysts say the whole debate is kind of a puny sideshow to the huge energy and economic issues in front of us. This hour On Point, the gas tax debate and America's crude awakening. What would a gas tax holiday mean to you? Would saving 18 cents a gallon over the summer make a difference? Is this pandering at the pump, or are the politicians saying something that you really want to hear? We'll be joined in a few moments by advisors to Senators John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama on energy and the economy. But first, joining me from Washington is Stephen Power. He writes about energy and environmental policy for the Wall Street Journal. Stephen, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
So what does it add up to? If this should happen, and President Bush said earlier this week he'd think about it, if the federal gas tax gets dropped for the summer, what's it going to mean to me, you, ordinary American driver?
Well, I actually posed this very question to Len Berman, a former analyst at the Congressional Budget Office here in Washington. And he has estimated that a family that drives 4,000 miles over the summer in a car that gets 25 miles per gallon would burn around 160 gallons of gas. Now, if you multiply that by 18 cents, you get $29 in savings.
Over the whole summer, sort of Memorial Day to Labor Day, or however they're defining it.
Yeah, for roughly the three-month period between Memorial Day and Labor Day.
$29, so what, $9-$10 a month.
Right. Now, he actually estimates that the savings would actually be much less because people would likely drive more if the price were to fall. So that would push up demand, and that would cause supply to tighten. And supplies are always tighter in summer because people are driving more.
So I'd save less because I might actually drive more in the end.
Right. And another somewhat perverse aspect to this, or effect of this, depending on your perspective, is that the people who would probably save more are the people driving the larger gas-guzzling SUVs.
What about, I mean, if you cut 18.5 cents a gallon on the taxes, does that mean that gasoline is going to cost 18.5 cents a gallon less?
Not necessarily. In fact, that's the point of many economists, is that even if you were to cut it, a lot of those savings are going to be consumed anyway and swallowed by the refiners. There's nothing to prevent the oil companies from continuing to raise the price. And obviously, when you make something cheaper, you give people the idea that there's plenty of that thing. So people tend to purchase more of it, and that tightens the supply of it eventually.
So in other words, the price out in front of the gas station might go down by 18 cents, might not go down at all, might even go up even though the gas tax gets taken out of it.
Right. And if you look at where gas prices are now, I mean, they're at roughly $3.60 for a gallon regular. And
yeah, and I was in California last week, and they're way up in $4 plus out there. So
right.
Yeah.
And if you just look at how fast they're increasing, I mean, a year ago, regular was at $2.90. So if you consider how quickly the prices are rising, it's hard to see how suspending this tax would really save the average consumer that much money.
So John McCain and Hillary Clinton both in their formal messages to the public talk about being serious about energy and the environment and so on. And of course, they're candidates, so they want to be helpful to Americans on the economic front. Does this look like real help on some of those fronts, any of those fronts, or does it look like a gimmick?
Well, I think the longer-term question that both parties are wrestling with, and which the country is starting to have more of a debate about now here, is what is the nation's long-term energy goal? I mean, do we want high prices for energy to encourage conservation and perhaps to fight global warming, or do we want lower prices for energy to help people live better, to live in the way that they traditionally have? That's really the tension here. Senator McCain and Senator Clinton, even though they are supporting this suspension of the gas tax, they're also supporting the idea of regulating carbon dioxide emissions and legislation to control greenhouse gas emissions. And the idea is to attach a price to carbon to make it more expensive to emit carbon dioxide. And that goal is completely at odds with the idea of making it cheaper for people to use more of more gasoline.
Stephen, the New York Times said recently that we may well see $4-plus gas across the country by the end of this summer, and that within the next 4 years, they're quoting at least one analyst saying, Americans could see gasoline at $7 a gallon. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, never mind individual families for a second. Can our economy take that? Can it deal with it?
It's going to require some pretty radical changes if in fact, it does come to pass. I mean, the American economy is just highly dependent now on imports of oil from foreign countries. So,
Can you hold the price down by tax policy, by legislation?
No. I mean, it's very hard to control the price of oil just through what any policymaker in Washington does. I mean, there are a number of factors here that are contributing to the run-up in prices that are beyond the control of politicians in Washington. You've got the economies of China and India coming online, growing very quickly, demanding more energy.
Yep.
You've got the weakness of the dollar, which is contributing to it. You've got speculators who are rushing to invest in commodities to act as a hedge against inflation. You've got just a number of factors. You've got also the fact that increasingly the oil that is out there is in the hands of national oil companies and in parts of the world that are off limits to drilling. That's true both in this country because of environmental restrictions and true in other countries.
Stephen, hold the thought if you would for a minute. I want to hear directly from the campaigns on this. If you'd be good enough to just stand by and stick with us, we've invited on advisors to the leading presidential candidates this hour, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama. Later in the hour, we're going to hear from MIT economist Robert Pindyke. But I want to dive right in as they call in to us. And first up here, we've got the McCain camp. With me from Arlington, Virginia, is Nancy Pfotenhauer, economic advisor to Republican Senator John McCain. Nancy, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So John McCain went there first. He said, hey, let's suspend the gas tax for the summer. Why is he doing that, and why is it not a gimmick?
He's doing that because we understand how tight the American family budget is right now and how the price of things like gasoline actually feed into the price of virtually every good and service that Americans are consuming. So it's something that could be done quickly and easily to at least offer a little bit of help to the burden that our families are facing.
But are Americans so hard up that saving $30 over the summer is going to make a big difference, or maybe a little more if the diesel fuel is taken out for their groceries?
You know what, Tom? It couldn't hurt. I filled my gas tank up yesterday, and it was $47.
Yeah, but if you drop this gas tax, I mean, even at best, it's going to save you maybe a couple of bucks on that. And if the market does what markets often do, may save you nothing.
Well, the burden, I think the burden of proof is on the politician who doesn't want to do anything. This is something that's easy to do. It's something that the American people overwhelmingly want done.
How do you know that?
Something that arguably can help.
How do you know that the Americans overwhelmingly want this done? I'm sure they'd like to have lower energy.
The poll numbers that have come out recently have shown in excess of 60% of Americans think this is a good idea. And they do because they've seen the prices go up and up and up. And even if all it does is slow the rate of increase, it's a good thing from the standpoint of consumers. And by the way, I don't think, even as an economist, I respect very much what your prior speaker had to say.
Yeah.
But I think because this is happening in the environment of an overall increasing prices, I don't think you're going to see a huge spike in the number of miles that are driven. It is high. The prices are high enough now that families are already having to weigh and measure any decision that they make,
yep.
whether it's taking
sure.
kids to college, trying to drive to Florida to visit the grandparents. It's become a line item in people's budgets.
But at the same time, isn't that when we've got to be very real about it? I mean, here's Gregory Mankiw, and he was head of George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. And he says, what you learn in Economics 101 is that if producers can't produce much more, and they can't right now, when you cut the tax on that good, the tax is kept by the suppliers. It's not passed on to the consumers. That's President Bush's economist.
Well, you know, we disagree with some of President Bush's policies, and in particular, you know, the spending that's gone on in the last 8 years. And if you put five economists in a room, you're going to have five different opinions on most things. and I do understand, you know, the normal pressures on supply and demand. My point is that that's somewhat ameliorated when these two things are happening in the context of overall rising prices. If you saw a sudden sharp drop in gas prices, then yes, you may see an uptick in demand.
Is this a contradiction with John McCain's stated goal long-term to bring down carbon emissions, which is going to require probably higher-priced energy, fuel?
First of all, it's an artificial construct to view this as you know, a primary piece of an overall energy policy. This is something that can be done in the short term to offer American families a little bit of help. We can do it. Anybody who doesn't want to do it, I think, has the burden of proof on them. From the standpoint of an overall net energy policy, which we're going to be rolling out in the next 2 weeks, and I'm sure everyone will engage in a very active debate because thoughtful people can disagree on these
things.
Is it
just a quickie symbol then, just a symbol of John McCain's compassion?
It's not a symbol. It's something that, you know, there are very few things that the federal government can do quickly to help out. There really aren't very many because it's, you know, we're dealing with complex issues.
Yeah, we got it. And here's one, maybe. Nancy Fotenhauer, we're grateful to you for being with us from the McCain campaign. Thank you very much for joining us.
And thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about lifting the gas tax for the summer. McCain and Clinton are for it. Obama's against. We're looking at the politics of energy policy and pain at the pump. We just heard from a representative from John McCain's camp. We're going to hear from the Clinton camp and the Obama camp. But Stephen Power with The Wall Street Journal covers energy and environmental policy there, has been listening with us. Stephen, what did you make of the McCain camp case here? Are you persuaded it's a great idea?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to endorse any of these politicians' ideas, but I mean, I would just refer back to what the economists are saying about what the savings would be. I mean, it's interesting to hear her.
Would be or would not be, you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I would just refer back to what the economists who are looking at this rather objectively are saying, that the savings would be relatively small. And when she says that there would be no harm done, I mean, the question that has also been raised about this idea is, you know, how would you make up for the loss of money? I mean, the money that's raised by this gas tax goes to pay for the maintenance of roads, bridges, and mass transit projects.
And that's estimated at like $9 billion, and yes, we've seen bridges fall down, even big ones.
That's correct. Now, Senator McCain has said that he would find offsetting cuts in the federal budget to pay for it, cutting pork barrel spending and other wasteful practices
right
in the federal government. But we know, I think your listeners already know, how difficult it can be in Washington to cut wasteful spending.
What about Hillary Clinton's idea? We're going to hear it in just a moment, but she says we'll make up for this with a windfall profits tax on the big oil companies. And we just heard in the news at the top of the hour, ExxonMobil taxes first quarter or profits up 17%, 10-plus billion in one quarter. It sounds like there's a target there.
Yeah. Well, there are two issues here. The first is, could you implement that policy politically? I mean, right now there are proposals in Congress to raise taxes on the oil companies. There was one that was tried just a few months ago, and it failed in the U.S. Senate in December. It failed not only because of opposition from Republicans, but from Democrats from oil-producing states like Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. Because they don't want to see an industry that does provide jobs in the United States singled out for tax increases. The other issue that's raised by that is the effect that would have on oil companies drilling in the United States. They say that it would discourage them from doing more exploration and production in the United States, that they would just simply move more abroad. And
Stephen, hold the thought right there, if you would. I want to go to the Clinton camp while we've got them with us. And joining us right now from Arlington, Virginia, is Gary Gensler, a senior advisor to Senator Clinton. He was in the Department of Treasury, Bill Clinton's, from 1997 to 2001, has a background at Goldman Sachs. Gary Gensler, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, it's so good to be with you, and also to hear Stephen as well.
We saw Hillary Clinton sort of posing for the cameras last night at a gas station. I forget where it was, with somebody in their big pickup truck. It hardly looked like a gas sipping vehicle. Hillary Clinton says she wants to reduce carbon emissions, and now she's talking about cutting the gas tax. Is this a contradiction? What's she up to here?
Well, Senator Clinton very much is hearing from voters and knows that we have a dramatic problem right now. Not only are working class people hit by energy prices, they're hit by housing decline and housing values and the subprime mortgage mess and an overall economy. And though she has a very aggressive long-term plan to address our dependence on energy, she has called for this temporary 3-month period to take windfall profits tax on oil companies and use that money to suspend gas tax during these peak summer months.
Well, Stephen Powers says that is very unlikely to actually happen. You'll lose that $9 billion. You're probably not going to get a windfall tax thing through. Anyway, Hillary Clinton's not in the White House to do it. So is this just, sending $9 billion down the river that could be used for repairing bridges and roads? Barely any real savings for that working class you're talking about, and little chance realistically of replacing it with windfall tax money.
Well, with all respect to Stephen's point, what Senator Clinton has proposed is a package, and it's to impose a windfall profits tax so that for the summer months there could be this relief. She's called for earlier relief in terms of energy as well. She was the only candidate to call for $25 billion for low-income heating and energy relief as part of a stimulus package. And in what she called for this Monday, she also called for closing $7.5 billion in loopholes for oil and gas producers to, once again, to assist lower-income families during these critical months coming up.
Gary, let me ask, I mean, you know that the critics of this have just been kind of over the moon in their disdain for it. Tom Friedman, New York Times, says this idea is so ridiculous, so unworthy of the people aspiring to lead our nation, it takes your breath away. It says when it's all finished, what we will have done is increase our debt to China, sort of borrowing to do this, increase our transfer of wealth to Saudi Arabia and other oil producers, and increased our contribution to global warming for our kids to inherit. He calls it shameful pandering and national political brownout. That must be uncomfortable for Hillary Clinton, who's talked a lot about the environment for many years.
Well, and Hillary Clinton has a bold plan that she rolled out last fall to reduce 80% of our greenhouse gases by 2050. She's taken on the oil companies and said we have to go to 55 miles per gallon automobiles in this country by 20 years, and to cut our foreign dependence on oil by two-thirds.
Great, but in the meantime, is this just pandering? I mean, is this really getting the country into the groove that she says she wants to get it into?
Well, I think your listeners understand there are long-term solutions that we very much need, and Senator Clinton has laid out a bold plan for that. But in the meantime, there is also a short-term, very real economic challenge we have, a recession, and those driving this summer could use and be helped by these short-term stimulus. The same way that Congress and the President came together on an overall stimulus package, and the same way that Senator mm-hmm. Clinton has been proposing relief for energy for the last several months now.
Gary Gensler, senior advisor to Senator Hillary Clinton. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Gensler.
Thank you, Tom, and thank your listeners.
Let's hear from the Obama campaign. With us from Washington, D.C., Jason Grimet, senior energy advisor to Barack Obama. Jason Grimet, thanks for joining us.
Tom, pleasure to be here.
Barack Obama's not joining the party on the gas tax holiday. Why not?
Well, Tom, it's not a holiday. It's a pretty bad trip. You know, this is really the perfect storm of the politically expedient instincts that have gotten us into this mess. over the last 30 years. I think Senator Obama believes that we've been on an energy policy holiday. And it's been marked by a discussion in which politicians ask and expect very little of the American people, and the American people have gotten very little in return. Consumers are hurting hard for a lot of reasons, which is why Senator Obama has proposed a $1,000 working family tax cut and also proposes to address the windfall profits and really deal with those issues in a serious way. But this is a head fake, Tom, and you've heard it, and you couldn't say it much better than Tom Friedman, but just to focus on the policy itself and tell you what's wrong with it and tell you what we really should be focusing on. You know, at best, this is going to pass maybe $30 to an average consumer, but as we've heard, what will really happen is that most of that money is going to go right back into the pockets of the oil companies. They're not going to pass it on to us. So, you know, Senator Clinton will have a, increase the windfall profits and then try to take it away. And, I mean, it's just a basic shell game.
But does Senator Obama, in political terms, whatever you think of the policy, come out looking like the Grinch here? Senator McCain last week in Selma, Alabama, he says, hey, if we give you a little relief at the gas pump this summer, you can go a little further. You can have a little more enjoyable vacation. Sounds like,
Senator Obama's taken a gamble that we should actually have an honest discussion about energy policy and that people are smart enough to recognize that these kind of quick-fix sugar cubes are not what the problem's about. You know, when we went on the eve of the war in Iraq, oil was $36 a barrel, gasoline was $1.50 a gallon, and the gas tax was 18.4 cents. 5 years later, $120 a barrel, $4 at the pump, and the gas tax is still 18.4 cents. The American people are smart enough to realize that the problem here is not that we tax gasoline to build public transit and keep bridges and roads safe. I mean, the fabulous irony is that at a moment when we need to be investing in this real long-term solution, the suggestion is that we should unfund public transit. You know, what we need to do is have a serious discussion about reducing the global demand for oil and developing alternatives.
Is it hurting Senator Obama right now in a campaign that's, going to be decided on the Democratic side in exactly these months when the tax break would be offered? Is it hurting him? Is it going to cost him taking that position?
I think this is the perfect metaphor for the differences between these candidates. I think Senator Obama has said that he believes that he can bring the country together, get us back to work, and take on the real problems. I think what we're hearing from Senators Clinton and McCain is that they don't have that kind of faith in the American people. They want to go back to the same kind of quick-fix gimmicks. And, I think this is exactly the debate the country needs to have. But just let me emphasize that, we careened from trance to hysteria in energy policy on the basis of fuel prices. In 2005, people weren't paying attention. Senator Clinton did the politically expedient thing, and she voted against fuel economy increases. Barack Obama took the tough vote. He voted for fuel economy increases, and then he went beyond that. He worked with Senator Dick Lugar. Together, they came up with a package called the Fuel Economy Reform Act that broke open the debate. Bipartisan sponsorship, got people who had never voted for fuel economy mandates in the past together, and we just saw the first significant increase in 30 years. Now we have another moment where we can show leadership, where we can take the easy way out. And again, Barack Obama standing up and saying, listen, folks, these are deep structural problems. If we want to regain any control of our own destiny, we have to fix our failing fiscal policies that have driven up the cost of oil.
So
we have to address the terror premium, and we have to deal with the fundamental imbalance between our myopic reliance on a product that we have no control over.
All right. There's the Obama view. Jason Gramey, Senior Energy Advisor to Senator Barack Obama. Jason, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you.
Stephen Power, just got you for another minute. What do you think? There's all three. There's the bouquet.
Right. Well, a couple things. I mean, one of the things that's often been pointed out is that the 90% of the proven oil reserves in the world now belong to national oil companies in foreign countries. We're talking here about entities like Gazprom in Russia, in Saudi Arabia. The investor-owned oil companies like Exxon and Chevron, they hold just 6% of proven reserves. So it's worth keeping that in mind, that even though Exxon and Chevron and some of these other companies are getting a lot of the grief from politicians in Washington, their ability to control prices is extremely, extremely limited compared to these foreign entities.
And to actually do this, who would have to pull the trigger, Stephen? Can the White House do it? Would it take action by Congress to make it happen this summer? What?
Yeah, there would have to be a measure passed, and you would have to do it pretty quickly. I mean, Memorial Day is approaching very fast, and there are a lot of other issues on Congress's plate, so it's not clear that could even happen that quickly.
President Bush said maybe. Does that make it more likely, or how do you interpret that?
My reporting indicates that he was sort of meant that in sort of a general way. I'm open to all ideas, but if you listen to what the White House spokeswoman said just a day before, she called this idea disingenuous. I don't get any sense from talking to people in the administration and people who talk to them on a regular basis that they are seriously considering this, but who knows? I mean, this issue is really affecting consumers, and it's hard to say what will happen.
Stephen Power with covering energy and the environment for the Wall Street Journal. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's take a call from Joe in Grafton, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I have got to agree with everything Stephen has said, considering the pulling the 18.5 cents, and then within 3 weeks, the price of gasoline will go up again.
Right back where it was, you think?
Up.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, well, one thing I would like to say is that we shouldn't be thinking this is an energy policy, but more of a petroleum policy. We're thinking that all the oil that is pulled out is just used for gasoline and a heating fuel, which isn't being addressed at this time. But it's also used in polymers and plastics. I mean, I can look around my room and see 15 things that are made with oil products.
Right, a million ways that high oil is driving up prices in everything you buy, not just gas. Joe, let us pick that up. And to do it, and thank you very much for your call. I want to welcome another guest right here, if I may. Robert Pindyke joins us. He's professor of economics and finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. Robert Pindyke, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me here.
We've just heard the policies, at least for the gas tax for this summer, laid out by all three of the leading contenders for the White House. You're an economist listening on. You hear the debate. 18.5 cents a gallon, you know, is on the table here, maybe to take it away, that tax for the summer. What do you think?
I think it's sad, actually, that two out of three candidates are proposing that we remove the gas tax. It would be a terrible idea. First of all, it would do almost nothing, because if you remove the 18-cent tax, the most that prices would go down would be 9 cents.
Why is that?
Now, the reason is that, think of it the other way around. Suppose we imposed a tax, and I actually think that what this country has to do in the longer run is actually raise gasoline taxes substantially. And suppose we did that. Suppose we got serious about reducing oil imports and reducing carbon emissions. And one way to get serious is by having a substantial gas tax, bringing us closer to what European countries do. Suppose we imposed a $1 tax on gasoline in addition to the 18 cents. What would happen? Well, when you impose a tax on a product, not all of it goes into the price. It gets split between buyers, between consumers and producers.
The producers eat a little bit of it.
They get part of it, right. Mm-hmm. They get hit in part by mm-hmm. the tax. And we understand gasoline markets very well. They've been studied a lot by mm-hmm. a lot of economists. And we know pretty well that a tax on gasoline, about half of it would be borne by consumers and about half by producers.
But what do you say to that consumer out there, Professor Pindyke, who's really struggling right now between food inflation and the price of gas and everything else? They're looking for anything, any break out there, and sounds good to them.
That's what's sad about all of this. It sounds good to them. I mean, that's why I don't want to use the word pandering, but it sort of seems like that. It sounds good to them. In fact, they're going to get very, very little from this. I think Stephen Power used the number of $30 mm-hmm. based on 18 cents.
Yep.
So it would be half of that at best. $15 is what
over the course of the whole summer.
Right, at best. And, you know, that's not very big. And, I think consumers hear this, voters hear this, and it sounds, wow, I'm going to save money on gasoline. This is going to be a big deal. And it's not. It's really not going to do anything. It's exactly the wrong thing. And there are a lot of other things that are hurting consumers, and particularly the poor, much more than gasoline, like food.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about lifting the gas tax for the summer. The proposal's on the table. McCain and Clinton are for it in the presidential race. Barack Obama is against it. And we're looking at the politics of energy policy and pain at the pump. Are you cheering for McCain and Clinton on this one? Are you cheering Obama? Some are asking for higher gas taxes, maybe a lot higher. What about it? Would you pay them? Could you pay them? Is it, I don't know, elitist to want them? Or is that the bullet we've got to bite here? And what do you think is the big lesson from this whole gas tax holiday brouhaha. We've been joined by Robert Pindyke. He's professor of economics and finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. He's paying a lot of attention here. We'll look at the big picture as well, but let's get nitty-gritty. Mary's calling from Groton, Connecticut. Mary, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hello. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
I don't care if it only saves me $15 or $5 or 5 cents. I want it. The gas prices are going to continue to go up anyway. They have continued to go up without the taxes being taken off. And I don't think it's just a gimmick. And even if it is a gimmick, I don't care how much it saves me. No, people don't seem to mind enough how much money has gone to this war in Iraq.
But you want the $30 or the $15 or whatever it may be, and tell us exactly why. Is it because, you know, that's the difference between groceries and cat food, or you're just upset at the high price of gas generally, or is it really, you know...
All of those things, actually. For years and years and years, I know the Europeans and others have been paying more than we're still paying now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, in some ways, we don't have a lot to complain about, but I am not, this money does not seem to be going that much toward the infrastructure of the country, which is in a mess anyway.
But this would mean less for infrastructure. Mary, may I ask, are you a Republican or a Democrat?
I am an independent, but I am definitely going to vote Democratic.
And if you're looking at Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on this one, does it turn you one way or the other, or is this just sort of noise in the background?
I definitely am for Hillary.
Hey, it's working right there. Mary, thank you very much for that call. Let me get one more right here. Thank you, Mary. Let's go to Kenner. Dylan, South Carolina. Kenner, it says here you're a trucker. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't really think that suspending the fuel tax is going to do a whole lot of good. They're just, you know, they're just going to keep boosting the price up, and you know, consumer goods are going up quite simply for another reason. You know, the average diesel truck gets 5.5 to 6 miles a gallon. We're paying $4.20 to $4.85 a gallon for diesel fuel right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's costing us $1 a mile to go down the road. Freight prices haven't gone up in the past 5 years, and you know, it's starving the transportation industry just about to death.
But I'm looking here at photographs of truck drivers at a rally in Washington just a few days ago. You know, and they've stopped their trucks and they're saying, you know, set us free from these high oil prices. We can't handle it. Would a gas tax holiday give you a little break on that, or what are you looking for?
Not really. The gas tax really wouldn't do a whole lot for us because, you know, with the fuel tax agreements and everything else, we don't pay fuel taxes at the pump anyway, other than the 18-cent federal tax. You know, we pay our state taxes on a quarterly basis to whichever state we bought fuel in.
So you're the truck driver. You're saying it's $1 a mile. The whole scene's not working for you, but this isn't going to fix it. Kenner, we got it, and we appreciate your call. Let's get one more from Savannah, Georgia. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi. I really enjoy your show. It's very thought-provoking.
Thank you.
I have a comment about the reducing the tax for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg. The oil companies are in control. I think the government needs to really find a different source of energy and just do away with oil companies altogether, because if they're in control, they don't want to lose the power. They're going to stay in control, and they're going to continue to dictate what we pay at the pumps.
Do away with the oil companies. Never mind the windfall profits tax. You want to just grab the whole thing? I mean, that's ever going to happen, Jeff.
Well, that's the thing, though. I'm an engineer, and it seems like the mother of invention is necessity. So if you need something bad enough, you're going to come up with an alternative.
Let's think about exactly that. Jeff, thank you for your call. I want to turn to Professor Robert Pindyke, who's with me in the studio, professor of economics and finance at MIT. All right. There's engineer Jeff in Georgia. He says, you know, invention's the mother of necessity, and we are getting up against it here in environmental terms and in energy price terms, at least to Americans. I mean, I had a friend who just drove in from Canada the other day. It's the gas right across the border in Canada, he said, is the equivalent of $6 plus a gallon, and Canadians are streaming into the United States because it looks cheap to them here. But we clearly need some answers. You, Robert Pindyke, are talking about a higher gas tax, maybe much higher. That may never fly politically. I don't know. Maybe it will. But would that begin to fix things?
Well, I don't know if it'll fly politically. By the way, the reason that people pay so much in Canada is they do have higher taxes, just as Europe has higher taxes. So whether or not it would fly politically, it's what we need in the long run if we're really serious about reducing energy use, if we're serious about reducing dependence on oil imports from areas of the world that are unstable and not always our friends. We're going to have to do something, and a tax on gasoline, a tax on carbon, but especially a tax on gasoline, is the easiest, cleanest way to do it.
But let me ask you, I want to get into the details of that, but you heard Mary in Groton. Mm-hmm. She calls and said, I need relief, and I need it now, and I'm sort of cheesed about the way everything's going, and I want it here. It's easy to sit here, you know, a tenured professor at MIT, you know, with whatever comforts that may bestow on you. What about people who live out in the boondocks? They're driving a long way to work. They may not have a fancy low-mileage car. You know, they've got to get there. The price of energy is real to them. It's not hypothetical. It's not national policy. It's how they earn their living, how they put food on the table getting to work.
Right. I agree. It's not something that people like. And if when gasoline prices go up, as they have been, that does put a burden on people. If you have a gasoline tax, there are ways to do it so that middle-income and low-income people do not suffer as much from
like
the
what?
Tax. Well, one thing you do, and this is an old proposal, this is nothing mm-hmm. new, is you take the revenue from the tax. Let's say you had a $1 tax on gasoline. You take the revenue from that tax, and you use it to reduce the payroll tax. You reduce the payroll tax, and that immediately reduces people's tax burden.
So there's less coming out of my paycheck to the government, though I'd pay more at the pump, but they would try and balance them out.
Exactly. You balance it out so it's neutral. And that way, you know, people don't bear a real burden. And they still would shift towards using less energy, using more fuel-efficient cars. And it would reduce our energy use without putting a huge burden on consumers.
So you're looking there at higher prices that would push people toward more energy-efficient transportation, though our country's kind of laid out in a way and has an automobile industry that's not really providing those cars. I mean, could we turn this around fast enough?
Sure. Look what happened in the 1970s. How did the Japanese car makers, how did they succeed so well in the 1970s? They succeeded because in 1974 there was an oil shock, there was an oil embargo, prices tripled, quadrupled, gasoline prices went way up in the mm-hmm. 1970s, mm-hmm. and the result of that is that consumers turned to smaller cars. Who made smaller cars? The Japanese car makers, Nissan, Toyota, Honda, they made smaller cars, and that's how they got a foothold in the United States.
What about, we heard from, now I apologize, but I forget if it was the Clinton or McCain camp. I get them confused on this one, but the argument that this is sort of part of an economic stimulus package. We're in tough times. Anything we can do, you know, to put a little more, even a little more cash in consumers' pockets, collectively it's a big deal.
Well, I just think that that's deceptive because the amount of money we're talking about here is so small that it's not going to act as a stimulus. You know, if you want to have a stimulus package, suspend the payroll tax for 3 months. I mean, that would do something. That's a significant amount of money.
But we've already got a giant deficit.
I agree, and that's why our hands are somewhat tied. We do have a stimulus package right now. Mm-hmm. Rebate checks are going out as we sit here and speak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a stimulus package, and that will be somewhat effective. But suspending the 18-cent gasoline tax, that's just nonsense to claim that that's a stimulus package and that's really going to help people. It's just not.
Let's take a call from Mason City, Iowa. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. I think your speaker should run for office. He sounds like a true leader.
President Pendyke.
Sometimes leaders need to make unpopular decisions sometimes and lead us in the right direction. This is pandering to the voters, trying to reduce that tax. That tax is necessary. I'm a construction worker and a union rep for construction workers. We need these jobs. Our roads need to be worked on. I think these politicians have short memories if they don't remember that bridge collapse in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That was a warning call that we have a lot of work needs to be done in this country that's been ignored. These roads and bridges and other infrastructure needs to be worked on. That tax money is designated for that.
And take it away. You're afraid that work will go away and the jobs along with it. Tom, thanks for reminding us of that angle. And thanks for your call from Mason City. Let's get one from Fisherville, Virginia, and Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I think suspending the gas tax would be very short-sighted and that this country has had too many short-sighted solutions to things, starting with Iraq. We have to look at long-term and figure out how to deal with the big problem, not just pander to people and try to put money. It's too short-sighted.
But, Kathleen, you heard Hillary Clinton's advisor, Gary Gensler, say, look, Hillary's got a great big plan for energy. She's going to be very bold and ambitious on it. Don't get distracted by this. This is just a little relief, a little mercy for the summer.
I still think it's pandering to people, and I think that we need I'm a Democrat, and I was leaning towards Hillary Clinton, but at this point, when Barack Obama says, no, we need to look at the big picture, we need to not just put Band-Aids, as the previous caller said, Band-Aids on a broken leg. We need to do this, and I think sometimes when people hurt with their gas money, I'm looking at all my trips now and how putting things together, I'm trying to work with that, and I think people in this country need to do that.
Kathleen, thanks very much for that call. Let's get one more here from Ken in Beaufort, South Carolina. Ken, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty well.
Well, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, but I'll be as nice as I can. I think that at the producer level is the problem. Anytime we have overpricing in any other product, widgets, whatever you want to call them,
yeah.
We go nuts about it. And here we are. We're afraid to do something to the producer. I mean, it's tied to national security. And look, you know.
But what do you mean, Ken? I mean, we've got troops in Iraq. You're going to put them in every oil-producing country? What can you do to...
That's not what I mean. I'm mm-hmm. talking about economics here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of working, you know, in one way we're trying to control oil, I think, sublimely underneath this national defense posture, and they're kind of clouded. But
that's not working. Oil's gone up like crazy, almost $120 a barrel. What could we do on the producer side, as you say?
Yeah, none of us really want to hear this, but real simple, and I know it's not simple, and I shouldn't even have said that because we always try to talk, as experts, we always try to figure out the way around something. We're going to lose by not being able to find a way around eventually, and we need to go right at the producer, and we're being raked over the coals. I mean, I don't have a problem with them making a great living and living in a castle.
But I don't hear where's the leverage? We couldn't do it in the 1970s. You may remember the OPEC embargo then. OPEC's still pretty tough. I mean, what could the United States really do to put the arm on producers, to bring the price down? Aren't the economics pushing prices up no matter what, really?
Right, everything you said is right, but maybe, hey, think about it this way. Try it on a different way. Maybe we made a mistake in the 70s. I'm not smart enough to do it, mm-hmm. I'll tell you straight up. But I know, and I have faith, that there's people, including the expert you have in the line, that are smart enough to figure this out, because we can stop other people from overcharging on any product, and we have not really been...
Haven't done it here. Ken, our time is short. Let us take it to the good professor, Robert Pendyke. How about it? Do you solve this on the producer side, putting the arm on the producer, saying, hold those prices down, or on the consumption side?
There's not a lot you can do with producers. And by the way, there have been, you could call this windfall profits. There have been windfall profits in other areas. Producers of grains like Monsanto and Archer Daniels Midland have made windfall profits because grain prices are way up. But there's not a lot you can do here. It's not that the producers are overcharging. It's that oil prices have gone up because of the world market for oil. What's happened in this case is that there's been a steady increase in demand, and that increase in demand will continue. It's coming mostly from China, from India, from other parts of the world that are developing, where people are starting to buy cars and driving and using more energy.
But us, too, sitting huge right in the middle of that demand.
We also use more energy, mm-hmm. but there's been very, very big increases in demand from Asia, from China, from India. That's going to continue, and supply has been limited. There aren't that many locations, that many places where supplies can increase. That's why world oil prices are up.
What about other sources of energy then? I don't know, solar or wind or something to get us out of this. I'm looking here. Congress in December of last year did not extend any more stimulus for wind or solar energy production. Tom Friedman here says 1997, America had 40% of global solar energy production. Last year, we were less than 8%. Are we checking out of that game just when we need it?
Right, Tom. It gives you the sense that we're doing everything wrong. That's kind of what this feels like here. And those credits...
Everything depends on this.
Right, and those tax credits for solar and wind are going to expire. The president and the Congress are unable to reach an agreement, a compromise. Both sides have dug in their heels. And those tax credits will expire. A lot of the solar panel producing industry is moving offshore, moving to Germany and other countries.
Are you confident that beyond this debate right now, these three candidates, as opposed, let's say, to George W. Bush, we've just got a minute here, it's unfair, but do you think that beyond this, and maybe this is pandering, maybe it's not, but do you think they have serious plans up their sleeve to change our economy, our energy consumption in a way that gets us out of this bind?
I think that all of the candidates are relying too much on the idea of subsidizing what they call winners, you know, putting government money into biofuels and ethanol and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a great idea. That's not efficient. That's not a good way to solve this
problem.
Including
don't subsidize solar or wind?
Well, I think the tax credits should be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
But pouring lots of money in, you know, picking winners like that, I don't think is a great idea.
But are we going to change course here under McCain, under Clinton, under Obama?
Well, I think I hope so. I mean, I hope that whoever's elected will realize that we're going to have to do something, and that something is probably going to mean some kind of carbon tax, gasoline tax, a combination of the two. That we're going to have to live with higher energy prices, that higher energy prices are what it's going to take to get people to consume less energy and to get companies to produce alternative forms of energy. That's what it takes to get people to invest, to get companies to invest in both conventional forms of energy and alternative forms of energy. So I hope that happens.
Sounds like a very different picture from a summer break. Maybe no holiday waiting for us out there, but sometimes you just got to face it. It's been great having you, Robert Pindyke, professor of economics and finance at the Sloan School of Management at MIT. Professor Pindyke, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.